Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we get an email referencing Nick's English Hut in Bloomington, Indiana. Hey, Jim, you went to IU. You ever miss hanging out at Nick's? Jim? I need you here to do the podcast. Yeah.
This episode here, we're going to combine a couple of different topics because we just got, you know, some shorter comments on things. So
some important stuff.
First off, let me play a call here about a movie episode that we just did.
Okay.
So this call is from Jesse Jackson. He is the host of a Bruce Springsteen podcast called Set Lusting Bruce.
Yes.
That's important for this call.
Yep.
Okay. When you host a podcast called Set Lusting Bruce, you know you're going to have an opinion on Blinded by the Light. I love the movie. I thought it was amazing. I thought it was perfect to show this newbie enthusiasm, you know, because a recent convert is always, you know, amazing, you know, kind of over the top, and then how he kind of brought it back down. We went and saw it with about 10 or 12 local Bruce fans. We all went, met up, had drinks, then went to the theater, and that made a great experience. We're going to do it again for Western Stars. But we all had the question that why was Jarvis quoting the river when the only two cassettes he had was Darkness on the Edge of Town and Born in the USA? I say he went out and bought the river, because it isn't like in 87 he could have Googled music. But the others thought it was just a mistake. But I did think it was funny that all us fans had the same question, which says more about us than the filmmakers. As always, guys, thank you for everything you do. This is Jesse Jackson from Dallas, Texas, and I hope to talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Jesse. Nice to hear from you. Hope you're doing well.
So this is in reference to the movie Blinded by the Light.
Yes.
And I saw the movie. I really enjoyed it, mm-hmm. as I discussed on episode number 678.
Mm-hmm.
So go back and you can check that out if you mm-hmm. haven't already. But I do think it's funny. So he says, you know, in the movie, it's right there shown on screen that the two cassettes that get him into the character into listening to Bruce Springsteen is Darkness on the Edge of Town and Born in the USA. Like
right.
his friend gives him those two cassettes
right.
and they show it right there. It's like,
boom.
It's very explicit. Right. So, and then he mentions him getting into the song, The River. And
yep.
I can't remember the exact timeline there, but I had the same impression that Jesse had is, and you know, got to remember too, movies get edited. So maybe it got a little incongruent there if you're like super paying attention,
right?
But to me it was a great example of this. You've probably had this happen in your life where when you get introduced to a band, they're sort of mid-career,
yes.
right? And you really love that one album or whatever that really caught you, then you go back and you get the stuff from
that's
before, right.
right? That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what happened here. The character got so into Springsteen that he got The River and he got Born to Run, because there's a
right.
scene where he's singing along to Born to Run.
Immediately had to go out and get all the other
right.
stuff.
It's
yeah.
called Blinded by the Light, so he obviously got, you know,
yeah.
greetings.
Yeah,
stuff, right?
Well,
so,
exactly. Yeah. yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that's how I took it.
Okay. So this is different from, like, you know, another kind of thing in a movie where, let's say, you know, he was listening to, like, the movie is set in a certain time period, but he's listening to a piece of music that hadn't been released yet or something like that
right.
during that time period. Or I forget which Lord of the Rings movie where you can see the guys wearing Nikes. You know, something like that. Yeah. I may have made that second part up.
Did that happen?
No, I don't think so, but it'd be funny if it did.
No, it's set in 1987. So anything
yeah.
that... The only music in the film until the closing credits when they play an unreleased Springsteen song. But to that point, the only Springsteen songs in the film are all stuff from Born in the USA and earlier.
Okay, cool. Got it.
got a job working construction for the Johnstown Company. But lately there ain't been much work on account of the economy. Now all them things that seem so important, well, mister, they vanish right into the air. Now I just act like I don't remember. Mary acts like she don't care. But I remember us riding in my brother's car, her body tan and wet down at the reservoir. At night on them banks I'd lie awake and pull her close just to feel each breath she'd take. Now those memories come back to haunt me. They haunt me like a curse. Is a dream a lie that don't come true? Or is it something worse that sends me down?
One other thing I didn't mention when I talked about Blinded by the Light that mm-hmm. I should now, because I think you're going to like this.
Okay.
Or you're going to relate to this, okay. Patrick, is the director of the film is a woman named Gurinder Chadha.
Okay.
And she also directed Bend It Like Beckham.
Oh, really?
Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I've seen that many times. That's a fun like, soccer movie.
You
yeah.
like the soccer,
yeah, the
right?
kids used to watch that a lot.
Right.
JJ were big soccer players and used to watch that movie for sure. Well, that's neat. I didn't know that.
Okay, so thank you for the call.
Thanks, Jesse.
And let's move on to another topic here.
Okay.
Which is Jason Molina.
Okay.
So it seems like we've talked about Jason Molina a few times on this show.
Yeah, we really have, which is great.
Most recently, we had a guest episode with listener Scott Parks,
yep.
a patron of the show, and he wanted to talk about the book.
He did. Sort of did. Scott's version of a book review, which was really great.
Right. And so that got people more interested again.
Yeah. Scott did a wonderful job.
And Jason Molina and his work. And so Jay Ignacio from Louisville, he mm-hmm. wrote in on Facebook and he said, great depth and insight on a lost genius. I saw Jason on the Electric Magnolia tour at the Rudyard Kipling, a neighborhood pub and restaurant in Louisville. Only about 30 people were there.
Wow.
From my memory, the show started as a Stark singer-songwriter show, then halfway through broke into a Neil Young and Crazy Horse frenzy.
Wow.
A truly memorable show.
Nice. That's the way it went. You know, he really had those two sides of the coin. That loud, electric, sloppy rock and roll music, and then that beautiful, sensitive singer-songwriter stuff. Yeah, so for sure, that's really cool.
And then Lane Hewitt from Mitchell, Indiana, wrote us an email and said, hey, guys, I started listening to you very recently.
Cool.
In fact, I just had it on while I replaced the outdoor lanterns on the garage. How suburban is that?
Really suburban.
Yep. He says, I listened to the Western Star show, speaking of Springsteen.
Cool.
Then the Jason Molina show, and now I'm listening to you guys talk about Mannequin Pussy and other new music. I'm enjoying the show quite a bit. Nice work.
So, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Lane. Lane goes on to say, I wanted to write to share an experience I had with Jason Molina.
Okay.
I moved to Bloomington in 97 after my first failed attempt at college. And when I wasn't working, I spent
haunting
record stores and clubs, soaking up the local music. I met Jason when he was working at CD Exchange. Mm. We struck up a conversation and I bought his first album that day. Eventually, I began writing about music for the Bloomington Independent and The Rider, which are free magazines, and set up an interview with Jason.
Oh, cool.
We sat in a booth one Sunday evening at Nick's English Hut. And aside from me, shout out to Nick's English Hut.
Thumbs up.
Great place. Anyway, we had a conversation. He was very animated and enthusiastic. He had recorded or was recording the Hecla and Griper EP
uh-huh.
and was confident that his new music was going to blow away whatever he had done. The interview ran in the Independent. I am terrible about holding on to my old stuff, so I'm not sure I have a copy anymore. If I run across it, I will pass it along. I saw Jason around town a lot for the next couple of years. We would chat when we ran into each other at a club and so on. He was always friendly. The last time I saw him in person was in Chicago, opening for either Giant Sand or Edith Frost. I can't remember which. I guess my other tangential connection to Molina would be that I got to be pretty good friends with Jason Groth of Magnolia Electric Company through his band Cadmium Orange. Jason's bands always had amazing basement shows in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it's a very special period in my life. Loving the podcast. Have a good one, Lane Hewitt.
Thanks, Lane. That was very nice. Very, very nice. You know, it's interesting about Jason's work that he worked very, very hard on his songwriting, and I think he shared something in common with a lot of other artists who, when they wrote a new song or when they worked on new stuff, they were like, this is it. This is the best thing I'm ever going to do, and it's going to destroy everything else I've done. It's a, you know, it's a brand new thing. So it's kind of cool to hear him express that, and he continually expressed that confidence as he grew and got bigger and bigger. So despite struggling with a lot of personal problems and things in his life, he did always focus very hard when he wrote that music and was constantly still writing, which is pretty amazing.
Here's what I want to know, Patrick. You have worked in record stores. So Jason Molina, while he was a fairly, I guess, well-known or at least established artist, was working in a record store.
Yes, he was.
Right? I think I recall that at one point in at Ear Ecstasy in Louisville, Kentucky, like Jason Lowenstein was working there.
He worked there too.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to know, like, how many times in my life have I bought records from somebody who was like actually in a band that I knew of, and I guess, and I didn't realize who I was buying the records from, right?
Yeah, true. Probably very true in a lot of cases. Yeah. I mean, I remember being intimidated when I was first starting to go to Yesterday and Today, the long lost store in Rockville, Maryland, about going up to the counter and Ian MacKay working there, but me actually having to like, oh my God, what is he going to say about this, you know, album that I'm buying? But it's so true. A lot of people that work there are just like, how did I know that this guy would go on to be in such a, you know, a famous band? So it's pretty amazing.
Well, people didn't know that about you.
No, they did
and
not.
And Wingtip Slim.
They had no idea what it was. Yeah, so many people from the Sam Goody music land probably really had quite an experience.
All right. Well, we appreciate all the...
Yeah, it's great to hear from you, Lane. Thank you, man.
Correspondence we get. Yeah, especially from somebody new.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Cool.
Enjoy the show. Now, we expect you... As we mentioned with the Springsteen discovery, now you go back.
You go back.
And you listen to all 650 plus episodes.
There's not that many.
Yeah.
You might have to take a sabbatical for more.
That's right. All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
At night, you can taste the sulfur and the red rail light. Hear the rails plotting their future paths on the prior night. Come early, my future, without delay. I hear whistles say and near new Albion bound. New Albion bound. New Albion bound.
All right, this has been a good week of correspondence.
Really has.
This week, right?
Yeah, it's great
some
to catch
stuff.
Up. Yeah, we've had some bulging mail sacks over here, and it's good to get those taken care of. You all right?
No.
We should phrase that differently.